Over the past few weeks, we've spoken to 100 sales leaders around the world to understand the impact of COVID-19 on revenue. And we've combined these insights into one single report that covers the immediate impact, the commercial outlook, the tech stack that you need, and actionable advice for sales leaders. You can claim this whole report completely for free if you go to ebster.com/COVID. That's ebster.com/COVID. This is Sales Ops Demystified, the number one most downloaded podcast in sales operations. We invite the brightest minds in sales operations onto the show to deconstruct the why, what, and how behind rep productivity, forecasting, metrics, and all things revenue. This podcast is brought to you by Ebster, the leading customer engagement platform for Salesforce. Hello and welcome to another very special episode of the Sales Ops Demystified podcast. Today we're joined by Freya Ma, who is calling in all the way from Sydney, Australia. Freda, how are you?
I'm very well, thank you, Tom. How are you?
Pretty, really, really good, thank you. And so this is going to be an interesting chat, and because we should be bringing in examples, answers to the typical questions, but from Freda's previous work and client work right now, because currently I understand you're working with a number of businesses on CRM and sales ops processes.
That's right.
So I want to kick off by understanding how you initially got exposed to sales operations. When was that and why was that?
Okay, a long time ago, I'll be showing my age. I might not tell you exactly how long ago. I actually started life as an IT developer, strangely enough. It was an unusual kind of start. All my old IT friends think I came to the dark side when I moved to sales. And I really just wanted to make a different sort of difference rather than solving technical problems. And I had an opportunity. You know, back in the day, I was working in PepsiCo, and they were a great organization for developing people and giving them chances across different parts of the organization. And an open-minded sales director thought a girl from IT might do a good job in their sort of sales ops team. And so I moved across and started working on sort of sales process, still from a technology side, but from within the sales team rather than from an IT perspective.
Got it. And so it was someone in sales who saw that you could have a talent further than just the technical side.
That's right.
And then they brought you over, okay. And so if we fast forward then all the way to today, I understand you're working with a number of different businesses. What is like the sweet spot for the type of business that you work with at the moment?
Look, it's a client's in a number of different industries. The two sweet spots that I'm very close to at the moment are membership associations, so people actually sort of selling and providing services to, you know, often professional memberships, so whether they be engineers or teachers or accountants, those kinds of associations. And also in an area where I spent a long time, which is the sort of healthcare associated areas, whether it's pharmaceuticals, medical devices, or more core kind of healthcare organizations. So I'm both of those spaces.
Do you have, when you go into these companies, do you have a typical tech stack that you either like to see or recommend?
I can't work with people that don't have a cloud CRM. Like that really is the core of it, because of the work that we do is, you know, broadly supporting lots of different organizations. And if you have to, you know, be on site or be kind of working with data that's not easily accessible, it's impossible. So a core requirement for us is that they have a cloud CRM in play, and that it's usually one of two or three. You know, we work with the big ones, Salesforce, Dynamics, those guys, and there's a couple of others that we occasionally work with as well. But you know, it's the big players.
And is there, like, on top of the CRM, is there any other kind of tools or technologies that you like to see?
I like to see some decent BI. It always makes a big difference in what we do if they've got something there. But it's surprising how many people are still running really significant parts of their kind of organization and their analytics on Excel. I'd usually like to, I guess, develop clients away from that if I can.
Yeah, of course. And can you share, and this could either be from back at your time at PepsiCo or a recent client, something that you guys have done that have significantly boosted productivity of the sales reps?
Oh, wow. That's a big question. It can be answered in so many different ways. Probably the one where I've seen people come unstuck in the most significant way is poor territory design. Like doing a sort of a territory restructure or just like tightening up roles and responsibilities as well as the kind of the way that territories are approached. I've seen massive, massive differences in productivity. Especially in organizations where, you know, territories have never really been properly optimized, and you end up with one rep that's got thousands of customers and is leaving money on the table, and another rep, you know, milking the life out of their 10 customers and having time left on the table and not kind of balancing those things effectively. If organizations are really unbalanced in their territory design, then fixing that can be the most profound difference in productivity that I've seen.
So poor territory design, if you just shared, is it really about communication to the reps? Like making sure that each rep knows exactly where they should be focusing? Is that the core problem?
Sometimes it's in some organizations where they've got really structured territory allocations. If there's sort of, you can only work in this area, and then they work in that area, but there's just no potential there. And another rep is working in an area with massive potential and not enough time. In some cases, it is kind of role clarity as well and giving people, as you say, communications and a clear understanding of what they're supposed to be doing. But sometimes it's as simple as which customers are allocated to which representative.
Cool. Have you, I assume in the last few months that a number of your clients have been working, or the reps of your clients have been working more remotely. Have you managed or helped them manage through that process? And do you have anything to share on selling remotely that could help the audience?
That's another tough question. And I probably, you know, selling in my own business, I've been struggling in the same way. Mastering the technology is a good start, like really being good at this kind of Zoom meeting and being able to, you know, look at people and understand where your eyes are, where their eyes are, how you're coming across in this kind of context. It took me a while, I think, to start being able to build relationships like in this kind of online space instead of face-to-face over a coffee. So building those skills in representatives where they do have the opportunity to connect online with their customers has been really important. And the other one, I think, is just helping them fill their days. So even if, you know, in a lot of the organizations I've worked with, their representatives have had customers. So, you know, when I was talking before about being in the healthcare space, a lot of them have had customers that can't see them, won't see them, don't have time. If they're working in hospitals, the reps aren't allowed in hospitals because the hospitals are all closed, like closed to, you know, everything other than essential visitors. And so understanding how they can see what customers they can online, but also set themselves up for when the time comes that they are allowed back in and really be productive with the time that they have in this downtime.
Yeah, so one example of a guest that we recently had on, he was instructing sales reps to still call prospects and customers, but instead of to pitch, it would be to share information about, if they're in a very specific industry, it would be to share information about the industry, but also ask questions to gather more information. And then they built up this kind of thought leadership from all the reps and then distributed that around people, prospects and customers. So that's an example of something that you're saying here that reps could use to fill their time during these kind of down periods.
Yeah. Whether it's, you know, intelligence gathering, relationship building, you know, skill building. Quite a few clients are actually, I thought that this might be a bad time for my kind of work, like the project work and development work. And in fact, it's actually been quite a bonus time, really, because there's quite a few people that have gone, no, that project we were going to do 6 months in the future, we're going to do it now because all our reps are, you know, sitting around and it's a perfect time to train them.
Great. So there's actually a big opportunity now to improve sales processes and to upskill reps when they're not wall-to-wall demos or cold calling.
Absolutely. It's a big opportunity to make some changes, improvements, you know, advance the capability of your sales organization right now.
Awesome. Apart from going back to the productivity question, because I feel like you have a wealth of knowledge here, apart from territory planning, what else are some of the first things you look at and optimize when you would start working with a client?
You know, it's funny because that was one of the questions I knew you'd ask, and I was thinking about the thing that I hate the most, which is organizations that go, oh, yes, Friday's our admin day. I think you're what, like a full 20% of your time is sat around talking to each other in the office, not talking to customers. And so starting to, there's a certain amount of admin that's, you know, part of life. And if you think you're going to do a job with no admin, you know, you might be very lucky, but probably not. But putting aside a full 20% of people's time for admin is crazy. So starting to break that down and going, where is that coming from? Is that because your CRM is so awful that you have to spend like the whole of Friday entering in everything from the week past, or your forecasting systems and processes are so awful that you have to all be sitting down for a whole day trying to sort that out? Like understanding what's taking people out of the field, taking people away from, you know, FaceTime with their customers, and starting to drill right into that right from the beginning.
Yeah, so the problem might not be the fact that they're having the admin day. The problem is, why do they need to have the admin day, and can we solve that so that we can maybe have an admin 10 minutes every day as opposed to admin day every week?
Yes, yeah. And admin, when you're kind of turning on your car and starting it between when you're driving to a customer, not big, giant blocks of time.
For sure. Cool. And then moving on with these questions, this one, I'm not sure how it's going to apply to you, but let's try it anyway. So the sales forecasting process, do you have any best practices or any kind of forecasting processes that you like to see or like to implement?
Funnily enough, there's not really one right answer, because I work with organizations that are generating forecasts from opportunities, and so from kind of new deals. That's one kind of structure, but a lot of customers that I have are actually working with an existing client base and doing kind of upsells and cross-sells and kind of incremental growth across those client base. And it's a really different forecasting protocol across all of those. In all of those cases, getting the right line between setting suitably challenging plans for your sales team and getting a suitably correct forecast for your, you know, delivery ops team, whatever shape that takes in your organization, building that, like managing that tension so that you've got, you know, one number that everyone's bought into is probably the biggest challenge that I've seen over and over again. Because the salespeople are always going, but that's too low, you know, we've got to be pushing them harder. And it's like, it's great to push them harder, but you've still got to commit to somebody delivering something at some time.
So it's managing the stakeholders, whether it's sales leadership, reps, and also ops and finance, to come to a number that's reasonable.
Yeah. And come to a number that you can deliver against. So you've got an ops team scaling up to deliver against this really aggressive forecast, then you're going to lose money if that delivery capacity is sitting idle after that.
Got it. And then moving on to metrics, if you could only choose one sales metric to measure for the rest of your career, for all of the work that you do, which would you choose?
Oh, crikey. There is no way I can choose one, because it is really, you know, in that kind of new business, kind of new opportunity space, it's really different metrics from that kind of growth space. In all cases, I would probably say I would like to avoid for the rest of my life looking in the rear vision mirror only, like, and just looking at the result and having that be the metric. Like, wherever it's possible, I'd love to find the answer of what is the behavior, like, what is the single most important behavior that this sales team can do that will grow the top line, grow the revenue that you need, and then measure that behavior consistently so that you know if they're doing that thing, you're going to get that result. So if I could only have one answer, it's not one metric, because that's impossible across my client base, but it is absolutely to not look backwards, to look at the thing that's going to deliver your result forward.
From one of your clients, when you have done the activity of trying to find that behavior, what have you found is that behavior that's most predictive of future sales?
Often it's call metrics, and not really kind of blunt instrument call metrics, but actually just turning up in the right places the right number of times. So it's, you know, and there are obviously those three elements to that. It's the number of times that you've turned up, but it's also going, what's the right place and what's the right time? Like, making sure that people are and it's interesting that my first sales boss in Pepsi used to say 80% of success is turning up. And it's surprising how many people don't turn up, like how many reps are given leads that they then don't action, how many reps are have opportunities that they fail to follow through. Like, and it's people that kind of walk away at the first no, all of those kinds of behaviours are the ones that leave business on the table, are the ones that don't drive success.
Awesome. And then finally, who has been the one person who has inspired or educated you the most?
Oh, tons of people, but probably the first really important sales ops person in my life was a lady called Pauline Bernard, who was a farmer sales ops, sales effectiveness leader, and pharmaceuticals is such an interesting space from a sales ops perspective, because of all the places, all the things that you can measure, they don't really have on a rep basis a rear vision mirror. Like, they don't ever know what a rep sold in most markets, because you don't know which doctors prescribed. All you can ever see is total drug sales. And so if you're talking to doctors about their prescribing, your link between total sales and rep behavior is really assumed. And so to understand that, like, she taught me how to understand that and taught me how to communicate the links that we could find between those things. Because it's, I think, what you were talking about before, the communication in these kinds of roles is so important. Like, if you can't help people understand what you're seeing in the data, what you're getting out of the reports, what you're trying to get people to do by putting data into the CRM and the kinds of things that you'll get out, if you can't help people understand that and see those links, you will never get anything done.
Yeah, I mean, that sounds really challenging, being able to trying to increase sales when you don't have any data on what your reps or the doctors are actually selling. So yeah, that sounds pretty like it was a massive challenge. Freda, here's what I liked. We pick out a quote from each episode, and I really like the quote. 80% of success is just turning up, but it's surprising how many people don't actually turn up. I think that's a really good quote we're going to be using. The whole admin day thing, but again, not the fact that people are doing so much admin, it's why do they have to do all this admin? It's kind of the role of sales ops to try and be there to over the long term, reduce the admin. So we can increase time spent selling, which is another popular metric from this show. And then finally, your part on the metrics and how we don't want to be looking backward all the time, and we want to try and find that one behavior that is most predictive, and therefore we can optimize for that and then grow sales that way. Freda, thank you so much for coming on.
Thank you for having me. It's been fun.
Thank you for listening to this episode of the Sales Ops Demystified podcast. If you are listening on a podcast listening application, then please subscribe, rate, and review. And if you have any questions about the show, if you know a guest, or if you have any questions about sales operations, just hit me up at tomhunt@ebster.com. That's tomhunt@ebster.com.